Welcome to Influential Entrepreneurs, bringing you interviews with elite business leaders and experts, sharing tips and strategies for elevating your business to the next level. Here's your host, Mike Saunders.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Influential Entrepreneurs. This is Mike Saunders, the Authority Positioning Coach, and today we have back with us Randy Carpina, who's the CEO of Sagacity Legal, and we'll be discussing the best patent filing strategy. Randy, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So when I hear a topic about the best anything, then that means that there's several. And then when I hear the words or see the word strategy, it tells me it's not just a fill in the blank submit type of an approach. So filing a patent is not as simple as let me just Google something and fill it out and get this downloadable thing. So I'm excited and interested to see or hear what you have developed that you work with your clients on for the patent filing strategy. So am I correct in thinking a couple of those initial assumptions that it's not as simple as just Googling something and filling in a document and thinking you're good to go?
It is. One of the reasons I wanted to talk about this today is I have seen, unfortunately, all over social media, the internet, chats, where inventors or inventors-to-be are talking to each other and presuming, or somebody else is giving advice that this is something you can do yourself, that really it's very straightforward to file and patent your invention. In fact, the reason those conversations come up all over the social groups is because a person, like the cheapest way that a person could file theoretically a provisional patent, and we'll talk about that later, is $75.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, I can do this myself. Why do I need to bring in an expert when I'm smart enough to have an invention? So that's, really the reason I wanted to talk about this today.
Yeah, it seems to me, and I don't know the world of patents and how to file and when to best. That's where we're going to get your advice on. But it seems to me like I do a lot of work with financial planners. And if you were to have one client talk to another client and go, oh, here's the best strategy to use, you should put all your money in X. Well, that might be great for them because the advisor knows all the story and all the different things. But for the other client, it might be the worst strategy in the world because they don't know all the moving pieces that are, under the surface, kind of like the picture of that, iceberg. It's like you can see the little tip, but, what's underneath the surface, that's where the true value comes in. And that's where someone like yourself going, okay, let's see where you want to go, what kind of invention, what kind of a patent should be done. And it's not, it might be at the very, very end, it's fill this form out and pay the $75, but it's all the work that went into it. So that's a huge mindset for people to realize.
Exactly.
So first and foremost, what's the benefits of patenting an invention?
And that is a great question because there are many inventors out there who don't feel that they need to get a patent, especially in the open source software world. That's a big one where people just want to share everything. So understanding why, and the benefit to obtaining a patent or patents is so critical to success. And I'm going to kind of bucket it into three. And I'm going to start with what patent protection gives you and then why that's a benefit. So patent protection gives the patent owner the right to exclude everyone else from making, using, and selling the invention for a period of time. So it sounds like a monopoly, doesn't it? In fact, yeah. A lot of people have debated about that, but it does. You make an agreement with the government that you will teach the world how to make your invention. They call it enable the invention. And in exchange, you get full use, a monopoly, for a period of time, 20 years from filing. So pretty long period of time.
Yeah.
Why is that a benefit? Well, that, number one, you block your competition. You are the only one that can do it your way. And number two, you have freedom to operate because nobody can stop you since you're the one with the ownership of that invention. So that's kind of the first. The second is something that you will know well, which is your business reputation.
Yeah.
When you can say patent pending, and correct me if you disagree with this, on your product, that increases your legitimacy. It makes, you know, the market, gives a market impression. And by the way, it scares off competition. Oh, they've already got a patent pending. So even before the patent grants, you are looking better. You can market this. You can take advantage of just the fact that you are showing yourself and your business as a technology leader. And the last is value. Patents are an asset. They're an intangible asset, where your computer, your phone is a tangible asset. So when your business is valued, when you need to get a grant or a loan, there's actually a financial value attached to your patents. And then some people don't even want to commercialize their invention, but it's a really great idea and they can get a patent, they can license it, or they can sell the patent.
Yeah.
So there's
they big might not
money
want to take action
in the patent
on it.
Industry.
Yeah, that's a really great point. You might have the best idea ever, but you don't have the energy to go out and create a whole business up underneath of it. But go ahead and patent the idea and then go license it to someone else that's got all of the infrastructure, whatever that might be. And, you know, we see it on Shark Tank all the time. But, you know, you stake your claim on that idea, that thing, let someone else do the heavy lifting, and you can then get the residual income from it. And I think that's a wonderful way to capitalize on your own intellectual property.
Yeah, exactly. And you would be amazed at the millions and millions of dollars in that part of the industry.
You know, I've said for a long time that it's like, I'm that kind of person. I'm like, I've got this cool idea. Wouldn't it be great if this thing, whatever, you know, this, I don't have the energy to go out and do prototypes and this and that, but let me just give this idea to someone and just give me some little payment stream and all that. So that really is a business model that obviously you're confirming is out there. If you've got a wonderful idea, do the work up front, just on the idea side, work on that patent, and then go shop it or get it in front of people that you would be interested in having them do the work of it, license it, and all that. And, you know, you mentioned something a minute ago, number two. The second point was about the branding and the credibility. And I wanted to add one piece to that, because you're spot on, is when a company has that patent pending, you know, you're filing the patent, take every single advantage of that authority and that notoriety and that expertise. And even when you file it, take a marketing opportunity to announce that at the right time, and to make sure that, you know, you're not announcing ahead of time. But when it's safe to announce that, use that as a marketing opportunity. And then, you know, each step along the way, when it's the patent is granted, when you get something in the mail that shows here's your patent, take every single one of those touch points and make it into a marketing event, because number one, it reinforces your authority. And secondly, it gives you something to talk about so that your audience, your clients, your prospects sees things, great things happening in your company.
Absolutely, absolutely. When one of my clients receives a granted patent, it's called a ribbon copy. The physical patent is really cool, and looks, and everyone's like, do something with it. Take pictures, video, show your audience how fantastic this is that you've just received. It's like winning an award. But much more valuable.
Yep, way more valuable, yeah. Long-term asset, yes. So you touched on the types of patents, so provisional, non-provisional, utility, all those kinds of things we hear out there. So talk a little bit about some of those types of patents that can be explored.
Yeah, and there's actually, within the U.S., and most countries are the same, but I always put the caveat that I'm a U.S. patent attorney, there are actually four different types of patents. I bet you didn't know that. And one of them, I bet most of the audience, and you may not know. So I'm going to start, I'll go through them, and then I want to spend a little bit more time on two of them. So there is a type of patent called a design patent. That is the patent for the ornamental design of something. So, you know, your cell phone, or, you know, even a mouse. If you could just think about all the products you use day in and day out that are identifiable by their look and feel, those are design patents. They're simply the look of it. In fact, design patents cover like icons, you know, on your phone or things like that. So that's one type of patent. The second type, the one that's the least known, is called a plant patent. People actually get patents on plants. Now, they're not plants that you grow in your garden, but they're plants that you create, say, by, you know, mating different things together in the lab, that kind of thing. So plant patents, I must say, especially, for example, in the cannabis industry, have become a big business. The two that I want to spend the most time and the two that people know the most or think of when they think of a patent are what I said earlier, provisional and non-provisional patents. Those are two steps in what we call a utility patent. So those are patents on products, processes, methods, things like that. Those are the typical patents we're used to seeing.
Yeah, like how now, something gets used.
Exactly. It could be, I do a lot of it myself. I happen to do a lot of software patents. Or it could be a product, you know, okay. Some really cool widget that you invented that's never existed before. So people will patent that widget or pieces of it before they start marketing it or start selling it. So the reason there is something called a provisional and a non-provisional, both attached to the utility patent, is because it's very important to inventors to get the date, to get the file date. I don't want to get too into patent law, but in the U.S. and many countries, first to file is considered and presumed first to invent, right? They get the patent. So if two people in two different states invent the same thing, file patents a week apart, the one who filed the week earlier gets it. So the provisional came along as a way for somebody to start the process but not finalize it. Now, a provisional application is a placeholder. It's never examined, it's never public, and it will never become a patent. It's simply a placeholder to give the inventor 12 months to get everything perfected.
Okay.
If they do nothing, 12 months later, that provisional just goes away. If within the 12 months, we call it convert to a non-provisional or file directly as a non-provisional, that is the application that we're used to hearing about that may become a granted patent.
Because there might be so many more steps and things and tasks that need to be done for the non-provisional filing that you don't have ready yet, but you just want to make sure that your, you know, line is in the sand, so you file as provisional first. It's not looked at, it's not being worked on, but it's that date, you get that application date started there.
Exactly. Get to the date. Mm-hmm.
And then gives you 12 months, and then now you start doing the things that you probably would have been done anyway for the non-provisional. It's just that now you feel like, okay, and the downside of that is there might be some fees to get the provisional worked on and filed with, you know, whatever that might be, but at least you have the peace of mind knowing that you have 12 months to then get the actual items for the non-provisional work done in a timely fashion without worrying or feeling stressed that, you know, you didn't get that application date in yet.
Exactly. And that's why, as we said at the beginning, we're going to talk about filing strategies, because you really need to determine, am I going to file directly non-provisional? Am I going to file a provisional first? And then what are they going to look like? And that's where the strategies come in.
Okay, so let's dive into what would that overall strategy be? And then what would some examples be? Because, you know, like being strategic about something means you've thought a few steps ahead, like playing chess. Like, okay, if I move here, then someone's going to do this. So what is that strategy to consider? And then what are a couple examples?
Yeah, so there's actually two parts to the patent filing strategy, two components, I should say, and most people don't ever even think about this. So one component is what I call the preparation strategy, and I'll talk about each of them. And the preparation strategy is, do you fully describe and ensure coverage of your invention, or do you just file a placeholder holder to delay costs. And I'll get into what that means in just a second. But the second, just so you see, kind of get the overall picture, is what I call an examination strategy. Now, examination is the fancy term for a patent application being actually looked at in the patent office and decided if it's going to be granted or not. So those are actually two separate pieces to a filing strategy that most people would never think of, or wouldn't go into that kind of a detail to think of. And when I work with my clients and I start saying, well, we're going to talk about strategy, but not yet, because we need some more answers for they're surprised. Why would we talk strategy when we're talking about an invention and filing? So, very, very important. Let's start with preparation strategy, because remember we were talking about filing a provisional in order to get that filing date?
Yeah.
But here's the key mistake that many inventors make when they first file a provisional. Only the contents of the provisional patent application keep the priority date of the later filed patent application. So that means if you write your invention out like an outline, one page, and you file it as a provisional and there's no detail to it, and then you start working on it, and guess what? You legally have lost the date of anything you added after. We call it new matter. So when you decide to prepare and file a provisional, you really have to think about what you're putting into the provisional. And if new subject matter later, if the invention isn't cooked at all, do you really want to do that? And honestly, one strategy is what I call serial provisionals. You file one, 6 months later, you're further along, file another, et cetera, et cetera. So there's all kinds of different techniques you can use.
So that's that's interesting to think about, because you might think about, oh, I'm just going to file this piece of paper because so I can start the date and then I'm good to go. And then 9 months later, I'm going to file the non-provisional. But the fact that you filed this almost blank shell of a piece of paper, so to speak, it really makes it null and void, because now later you're doing the full, explanation. So how touchy is that? In other words, if you filed a provisional patent application and you had some pretty good detail, and then there's like one nuance that you added into it when you started to file the non-provisional, does that kick out the, the application date? Or how worried do you have to be that, of how much content you put in the provisional application?
That is the perfect question. And so, by the way, side note, so many inventors come to me that did a DIY provisional and then they know they need an attorney to file their actual.
Yeah.
And I look at their provisional like, I have some bad news for you.
Yeah.
So the most important thing to do first, and I do with my clients, is to determine what is actually patentable. So it's almost like playing patent office. I do what's called a patent search and legal opinion, and I figure out what in the invention as at that moment is patentable. Now, if that additional piece that you mentioned was not in the original and that's the patentable piece, well, then you've just wasted time, right?
Right.
You lost everything with that original. But if what you have is maybe a couple of drawings and, some great concept, and when we do the search, we figure out that there's a piece that's patentable. Then if you just add maybe, some circuitry or some software code that isn't the patentable piece, you're fine.
But it supports what you put into the original application filing. It's not
exactly.
It's not a new thing. Good. That's a good distinction. But the big distinction is, here's the DIY downloadable template document to file your provisional patent, fill in the blanks and hit submit and pay your fee. You might be in for a surprise if you didn't do it the right way, or if you go to file the non-provisional and added some content and now all of a sudden someone came in between in that 6 to 9 to 12 month period and you might be out in the cold.
Yeah. See how this becomes, it's just like your marketing strategies, right? And your business strategies. It's all about what the competition's doing, yeah. How far along are you? And like I said, so when I do the searches and I'm looking at an invention and I'm talking about strategy with an inventor, sometimes I'll say we can do what's called a full provisional, which means it looks just like the non-provisional. It's maybe 20 pages long and lots of drawings. And we do that when what we believe is patentable in the entire product is small. And in order to distinguish it from the competition, which could be just patent competition, we have to add more and more detail.
Yep. Good. Well, that sure defines the word strategy with a filing strategy for patents because, boy, if you don't know the end game and what you want to accomplish and what you have now and what it takes to get there, one little misstep, and I'm sure that it's like, oh, well, the chances that that's going to happen are minimal. Yeah, but you might think that until it happens.
So I wanted to make one other point. Remember, so that was mostly what we talked about was preparation strategy, but there's actually, and you'll like this because it's a marketing piece, which is what I call examination strategy. So I will recommend to my clients to file a provisional, not only if they're not finished, but also if they're not sure of market acceptance. So with a provisional, like we said, you get the date, but it's cheaper, it's less expensive to prepare, and it's a placeholder while you maybe go out and do market research, determine if there's even going to be a market for it. And it sometimes will file a provisional because it's less expensive and then determine there is no market. So you never actually put in the funds that you would have spent up front if you hadn't done it. There's a whole examination strategy around where your business is at the moment and what you know about market acceptance.
I love it. I mean, it just pays so much for most of the time when you have something that is very potentially substantial to have it done the right way first. And when you try to do something on your own, there's a good chance that you might have left something out or not optimized it the right way. So making sure that you have someone like yourself to guide someone through the process is going to save so much in headaches down the road. So this has been so neat to hear some of these specific strategies and differences between provisional, non-provisional. So that's been excellent. Randy, if someone is listening to this thinking maybe you need to give me a little bit of a, second opinion or guidance, what's the best way that they can reach out and learn more and connect with you?
There's a couple if they just want to learn more about my firm and then connect with me at my website. It's sagacitylegal.com. And there's a blog there where they can also, for someone who likes to read, can read. To schedule time with me, it's super easy at meetwithrandi.com. And there you can get right on my calendar and book some time. We can chat about your invention or your great big idea and I'll, help you through the process.
Excellent. Well, Randy, thank you so much for coming on today. It was a real pleasure talking with you again.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
You've been listening to Influential Entrepreneurs with Mike Saunders. To learn more about the resources mentioned on today's show or listen to past episodes, visit www.influentialentrepreneursradio.com.